Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, I am fantastic. We just are having beautiful weather here in Toledo, Ohio. But hey, let's talk a little golf. Lydia Ko made history at the Evian last weekend. Another U.S. golf team lost to the Europeans. And the Solheim Cups this week. Will we see another U.S. loss? We're going to talk about it, Carlos. Let's go.
Let's go. We have a lot to talk about. But as usual, we start our show with the weekend backspin, where we recap the weekend's action. You know, the PGA Tour, the Champions Tour, the European Senior Tours had the week off, so we have to start with the main event this past weekend. That was the last major of the LPGA and Ladies European Tour seasons. That was the Evian Championship that was played at the beautiful Evian Resort and Golf Club in Evian-le-Bains in France, where Lydia Ko there shot a record low final round at the Evian to become the youngest woman to win a major golf championship. She achieved her goal at 18 years on 142 days in what was her last chance to claim that record. She eclipsed a previous record set by American Morgan Pressel, who was 18 years, 10 months, and 9 days old when she won the 2007 Kraft Nabisco Championship. Lexi Thompson, who finished second, was one up over Lydia when they made the turn, but with back-to-back birdies on 11 and 12, Ko went up one up, and when Lexi double bogeyed the 14th, man, that was game, set, and championship for Ko. She would go on and add three more birdies, including 17 and 18, to close with a bogey-free 8-under 63 for a 6-stroke victory. Mi-Young Lee, who had an overnight lead off one stroke over Thompson, crumbled over pressure and finished tied for fourth place, 9 back. Chinese Chong Chong Fong was third with an 8-under total for 276. But Fred, I want to take a moment and talk a little bit about Lydia Ko. You know, our Golfaholic listeners know that we have a soft spot for the LPGA, and we have been covering it ever since our first show started. And also their young rising stars, just like Lydia Ko. You know, she joined Sir Bob Charles and Michael Campbell as the only Kiwis to have won a major championship. And now with that $489,000 paycheck that she took, her career earnings have risen to over $5.487 million. Yet, even that could eventually prove to be chicken feed. Her majestic six-stroke win sent ripples around the golfing world. Observers are already predicting that it would bring her endorsements as well as her confidence level to an increasingly high level. Winning a major, as you all know, opens the doors, especially for her in Asia and the lucrative United States markets. Ko is already super popular in South Korea, where she was born, even though she was raised in Auckland in New Zealand. She could now look to link with a large global brand. Coach David Ledbetter, who reworked her swing so she could play a wider range of shots, felt she had the ability to become a golfing legend. He has even gone far as saying that she had no weaknesses and she was a fast learner. Her 63 tied the lowest final round in a major on the LPGA Tour and was the lowest by an eventual winner ever. She produced her best career round under massive pressure to deliver her record-breaking win at the last opportunity to do so. Her mental performance coach, Dave Neath, has said that Ko had worked a lot on being in the perfect frame of mind to handle those situations. You know, Fred, Ko has always been asked when she would win one. Now with the monkey off her back, the confidence is now there, and the floodgates of major wins might have been open for her, and we might just be witnessing the turning point of what could turn out to be a legendary career.
Yeah, Carlos, 63. Ko posted an 8 under par 63. It was the best round of the day on Sunday by 3 shots. 3 birdies on the front and 5 birdies on the back with 0, count them, 0 bogeys. As you mentioned, 18 years, 4 months, 19 days, Ko becomes the youngest major winner ever. She also now leads the race to the CME Globe points list and only trails NB Park by $126,000 for the money title. She also creeps a bit closer to NB to regain her number one on the Rolex ranking. Carlos, I really felt when she began the day just 2 shots behind leader Lexi Thompson that she would win. Her steady, consistent play all week just wears other players down, just like Tiger Woods used to do. No mistakes and throw in a few birdies for good measure. You know she's going to shoot at least 3 or 4 under par every time, and it puts pressure on the rest of the field. Lexi posted 66, 72, 66, and a 70. A little inconsistent. She faltered on Sunday with that untimely double bogey at number 14 that gave Ko the lead for good. After a couple years of renovation and very bad weather for the Evian Championship, they finally had some great weather there. Course looked awesome, and the views across Lake Geneva were fantastic. The LPGA finally got what they wanted, a Lexi-Lydia showdown in a major. And Carlos, this was just a preview. We're going to be seeing these two young stars battle for majors for several years to come. Now, the other question, is the Evian becoming a true major? Well, in most golf fans' minds, you can't just name a major championship out of thin air, and that's exactly what the LPGA did by calling it a major 3 years ago. It takes time, tradition, and history to make a true major championship. You have to have the best players rise to the top and compete for the trophy. But that's exactly what the LPGA got this year. Michael Wan continues to look pretty smart. And you know, Carlos, to follow up on your sponsorship number, you know, she's a $5 million career. She's almost at $2 million for the year. You know, on the men's tour, I don't know what the numbers are on the women's tour. I'm sure they're not as large. But on the men's tour, someone like Jordan Spieth, Tiger Woods when he was in his heyday, Phil Mickelson, you know, they multiply their sponsorship money is at least 3 to 4 to 5 times what they earn on the course in prize money. So, like when Tiger was an unusual case, when he was winning $9, $10 million a year, he was earning $80, $90, $100 million total in endorsement money. But most of the guys, like Phil, has been earning $40 to $50 million, and he's been earning, you know, $3 or $4 million on course. So, I would think that Lydia is going to be in the range, you know, she's making $2 to $3 million a year on the course. She's going to be on the range of making $5 to $10 million off the course. I would think that's got to be a minimum number. So she's going to be a pretty wealthy lady by the time she turns 30 and wants to retire, Carlos.
Most definitely. And we are just in the beginning stages of seeing that. And as usual, you can follow us and you will see every bit of detail about it. Hey, there was, like you mentioned at the beginning, another team competition where the U.S., was crushed. I think that all the alarms are sounding now. All those committees might be, you know, already calling for meetings and all that. So I don't know, after Great Britain and Ireland regained the Walker Cup in comprehensive fashion at Royal Lytton on Sunday afternoon, securing the points required against the United States with 6 matches still to finish. They were leading 10-6 after the morning foursomes. Then homesite needed just 3.5 points from the 10 singles to secure a 5th win from the last 6 contests on home soil. And they did so at the earliest possible opportunity, thanks to victories for Ashley Chesters, Cormac Charving, and Jimmy Mullen, and a half from Paul Dunne in the top 4 matches. Chesters was sent out first once more and made it 3.5 points from four by beating Jordan Newbridge, who lost all three of his matches just 2 months after finishing sixth in the Open at St. Andrews. Charving then saw 52-year-old Mike McCoy 4-3 before Mullen, who had partnered with Chesters to two foursomes wins, beat Danny McCarthy to become the first GB&I player to have a perfect 4-0 record since Paul Casey and Luke Donald at Nairn in 1999. That left Dunn to secure a half against world number two Maverick McNealy, who missed from 5 feet for birdie on the 18th to keep the biennial contest alive. United States captain John Miller controversially sent NCAA and U.S. amateur champion Bryson DeChambeau out last in the singles, but he admitted that his team had been outplayed from the start. Well, too bad for you. DeChambeau had been on the 10th hole when the contest was decided and went on to beat Gavin Moynihan 6-5. By the way, Paul Dunn, Gavin Moynihan, and Gary Hurley joined the ranks of professional golfers yesterday, just a day after the Walker Cup success. Dunn is set to play in the Italian Open this week in the European Tour, which will be his first event as a professional. And definitely, Fred, like you mentioned, something's going on that Europe has got our number. Hopefully it doesn't happen on the Solheim Cup.
Yeah, I wouldn't count against it, though, Carlos. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, GB and I just dominated the U.S. The final score is 16.5 to 9.5. I mean, that's a wide margin. You know, big blowout for the Europeans. When we last saw Royal Lithum, Adam Scott was blowing a lead in the Open Championship that led to Ernie Els win. The course was too tough for him then, and it proved too tough for the Americans this year. Errant drives and missed putts were just too costly for the U.S. team. As always, GB and I, the Great Britain and Ireland, dominated the foursomes, the team games, but this time they also dominated the singles. Saturday's singles matches were split even 4-4, but in Sunday's singles, GB and I captured 6.5 points to just 3.5 for the Americans in 10 matches. In the two foursome sessions on Saturday and Sunday, a total of 8 matches, GB and I earned 6 of the 8 points. So that's where they won, was in the team matches. They also played well in the singles. U.S. amateur and NCAA champion Bryson DeChambeau was one of the only bright spots for the American team. You know, just pretty much everybody else had losing records. You know, the significance of the Walker Cup, Carlos, you know, a lot of people probably didn't watch it, probably didn't realize what was going on, but, you know, the first Walker Cup was played in 1922 at the National Golf Links on Long Island, New York. This was the 45th playing of the Walker Cup since it started. And since 1995, Great Britain and Ireland has won 6 of the 11 competitions, and they have won 2 of the last 3. You know, young players, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, they're just a few of the names that excelled in Walker Cup before turning professional. Many of the young men, and as you've already mentioned, are turning pro, but that were in this year's Walker Cup are at the end of their collegiate careers and will turn professional in the near future. They will try to earn cards in a handful of tournaments yet this season, and we will see them next year on the Web.com, Challenge, PGA, and European Tours. One of the exceptions to this is 52-year-old American Mike McCoy, who's been a top amateur in the U.S. for a long time. He was the oldest competitor in the matches. Maverick McNealy for the USA and European team member Ewan Ferguson from Scotland were the youngest at 19 years of age. For an amateur to qualify for the U.S. Open or the Open Championship and play well, as Paul Dunn, Ashley Chesters, and John Nieberg did at St. Andrews, is a huge accomplishment. But to be chosen for the Walker Cup team is a great honor for these players, Carlos. I always enjoy watching the Walker Cup. I watched it 2 years ago when they played at the National Golf Links, because you just don't get to see that golf course that often. I really enjoy watching it. I hope to get to one someday, because you're seeing the best young players of the time. Carlos, I do have a rant. It's time for a rant. I haven't had one for a while, and I was really disappointed in golf coverage on TV this weekend. The Walker Cup was not readily available on US TV, And most fans probably had to catch the edited highlight version on ESPN2 on Sunday afternoon after the whole thing was all over. I think this is just a travesty. I thought Fox Sports had the USG events. What happened with that? Even their badge coverage is better than no coverage at all. You know, if you could get BBC, they had coverage, but the morning rounds were only available on ESPN3 in the U.S. And don't think I've forgotten about the Evian Championship, Carlos. Why was there no live coverage of the Evian Championship? If it's a major, it's got to be covered live. Golf Channel was offering it tape delayed. The leaders were on the last few holes before Golf Channel even picked up the coverage, and then they began clear back at number two. Why didn't Golf Channel pick it up early at the start and broadcast it live? Is Charlie Reimer and Morning Drive that important? Big mistake by Golf Channel here, Carlos. That's my rant for the week.
I don't know how to follow that up because you already got that. For me, and we talked about this, it was the Evian Championship. I woke up early. I want to see Lydia Ko. Let me check. And I see Golf Channel with the Morning Drive. What? Man, I wanted to see it live. I mean, for that, I don't have to turn on the TV. I can see it on my phone, which I was doing, following the leaderboard and everything that was happening. I didn't need to see it there. I already knew what was happening. Why would they do that? It's really like a total disrespect to me that I already know what's going to happen. Why are you showing it? I want to see it live. I want to see history happening, and definitely on time, live right there. Please don't do that again. I don't know what happened there. Who blew the whistle here? I don't know what happened. But anyway, hopefully it doesn't happen anymore and we get some more live championship. Like you said, if it's a major, you got to cover it live. Otherwise, stop calling it a major and just make it another tournament. Anyway, there was another tournament as well on the Web.com Tour, which is already on the playoffs. And that was, you know, the Hotel Fitness Championship played at the Sycamore Hills Golf Club in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where former Augusta State University Jaguars men's golf All-American Henrik Norlander shot a course record 10-under-62 on Sunday to win it. And for that, he secured and claimed his PGA Tour card for the 2015 and 16 season. Norlander, who is a 28-year-old from Sweden, trailed by 6 shots entering the final round, but he carded 10 birdies and 0 bogeys, resulting in a 3-shot victory over Michael Thompson and D.H. Lee. He finished 47th in the regular season of the Web.com Tour's monolith, but he earned his first Web.com Tour win and claimed his 2016 and PGA Tour card in the process.
Henrik Norlander from Sweden, 10-under-par-62 on Sunday, pretty good round there. Won the first stop on the Web.com Tour's final series in Fort Wayne. Norlander's first professional win. He missed 9 cuts this year versus 11 made cuts, so about a 50% ratio there. He did have 3 top-10 finishes, so when he plays good, he really plays good. When he plays bad, he goes home early. He did have the putter working on Sunday. He took only 9 putts on his first 9 holes and only 21 putts for the entire round. Norlander said, "I got off to a great start. I made a bunch of putts on the front nine and was 6-under and kept it going on the back nine and hit some really good shots on some tough holes." You know, with the win, he locks up his 2016 PGA Tour card. He was a member of those great Augusta State golf teams, you know, down there with Patrick Reed and those guys when they were winning. So, you know, he's played with some good golfers, and maybe this is what he needs to really have a good year next year out on the PGA Tour, Carlos.
And there were 2 more tournaments also on the European Tour. One of them, it was the KLM Open, played at the Kennemer Golf and Country Club in Zandvoort in the Netherlands, where Belgium's Thomas Peter is going to his second consecutive European Tour victory as joint overnight leader. Lee Slattery had the chance to match Peter's 19-under par clubhouse total and force a playoff, but he missed a 5-foot putt on the 18th for a bogey, meaning that Slattery, who won last week's Russian Open, dropped into a tie for second on 18-under alongside Spain's Eduardo Larriva and Peter's triumph by a single shot. Peters won his maiden title at the Czech Masters on his last outing 2 weeks ago. Worth mentioning, and I know you're going to like this one, Fred, is that Tom Watson is starting to make a push for the Ryder Cup berth next year. He shot a third consecutive 68 Sunday. Unfortunately, he finished at 7-under at tie 47, so he needs to step it up a little bit. Our final tournament this past weekend is on the Challenge Tour. That was the Kazakhstan Open, played at the Nortel Golf Course in Almaty, Kazakhstan. And by winning that tournament with his second victory on the Challenge Tour of the season, Sebastian Groh took control of the tour and pocketed 72,000 euros. With that success in the tournament, with the highest purse on the season for that tour, the French is already assured of progress on the European Tour next season. Groh won his duel with Danish Mads Søgaard on the back nine to finish it with a 69 and win by one stroke after delivering a great battle between them all day long. That wraps up our weekend backspin. We're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we're going to have the Par 5 News sponsored by United Golf Network. So nobody go away anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, sponsored by United Golf Network. And Fred, you get to tee off, and I believe you have something about, you know, David Faraday finding a new home.
Yeah, we got some breaking news, Carlos, to start off before we get right into the Par 5 News. This morning it was announced that David Faraday, who was a longtime on-course announcer for CBS, and, of course, failed to reach a new contract with that network last week. But never fear, NBC announced today that David has signed with the NBC Golf Channel Networks. He will be utilized as an on-course and tower analyst for NBC and the Golf Channel, which they include, you know, the Florida Swing on the PGA Tour, plus the Players' Championship and the FedEx, and three stops on the FedEx Cup playoffs. He will also be featured during the 2016 coverage of the Ryder Cup and the Olympics down in Rio de Janeiro, as well as select PGA of America and European Tour events. With NBC's new contract with the RNA, he will announce golf's oldest championship, the Open Championship, beginning in 2017. Faraday said, "I'm really looking forward to this next step in my career, but I'll miss a lot of people who have had my back for nearly 20 years. And to be honest, I'm on the verge of soiling myself. However, I am looking forward to the new challenges and opportunities at NBC and Golf Channel. I haven't yet heard the over-under on me getting fired, but hey, I beat the odds last time." Faraday will continue his interview show series on Golf Channel, and Universal Productions, a subsidiary of NBC, gets the right of first refusal on any new Faraday productions. You know, Carlos, even my wife likes to watch the Faraday interviews on Golf Channel and his show called Faraday. You know, we are happy for David that he landed a good gig, and we wish him all the best. So, Carlos, moving on into the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, Tiger Woods has been the number one ranked player in the world a total of 683 weeks in his career. Yes, that's a little over 13 years. And even though he has fallen to number 283 in the official world golf rankings, he still brings a lot of media and fan attention to a golf tournament. Because he did not qualify for the FedEx Cup this year, he's been sailing his boat, watching football, and hanging out with his kids of late. It appears that Tiger decided that maybe he needs to play a little more. But in reality, he's just fulfilling a deal he made with the PGA Tour to appear in the Fries.com by the end of this year. Because the tour released he and Rory McIlroy to play in a big exhibition in 2012 in Turkey and pick up a huge appearance fee. In any event, Woods and current number one ranked McIlroy will play in the Fries.com October 15th through the 18th, held at Johnny Miller's Silverado Country Club in Napa Valley, California. maybe Tiger can get in a little wine tasting while he's there. I hear they have some pretty good wine out there, Carlos. It has also been announced that reigning master champion and world number two, Jordan Spieth, will join number one, Rory McIlroy, and defending champion and world number four, Bubba Watson, at this year's WGC-HSBC Champions event, which takes place at the Shenzhen International Golf Club in Shanghai, China, November 5th through the 8th. The WGC events are no cut and offer an $8.5 million purse with $1.4 million to the winner. Oh, yeah, there's also a total of 550 2016 FedEx Cup points available. So lucrative little deals there. Guys are going to play a little bit this fall before they hang them up for the Christmas and New Year's break, Carlos.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Fred, one thing. You need a degree from MIT to figure out the official world golf rankings, which I believe neither of us have, probably, right? So let's skip that and talk for a second about Jordan Spieth short stint atop the golf world. You know, the official golf world rankings is calculated based on a two-year rolling average. Tournaments played 24 months ago come off the books, and your most recent results weigh most heavily. The tens of points that currently separate the two mean they could go blow for blow for the number one spot for a long time. McIlroy's lead over Spieth, 0.023 average points, is the closest margin between the world's number one and number two players in the history of the rankings, which dates back to 1986. The world rankings official said that McIlroy returned to number one due to his divisor number of tournaments played over a rolling period of 2 years, decreasing by one. Oh, wow. And now I'm getting back to that quantum physics stuff nobody understands. So in plain words, Rory's performance in the tournaments over the exact last 104 weeks is that slight number better than Jordan's. Hope you understand it. He was assured of going number one after he started for 29th at the Deutsche Bank Championship a week ago. So McIlroy, Spieth, and number three, Jason Day, all have a chance to become number one with a victory at this week's BMW Championship. The number one ranking has now changed four times since last month's PGA Championship, where Spieth claimed the top spot after finishing second today. 2 weeks later, McIlroy moved to the top when Spieth missed the cut at the Barclays. A week later, despite missing the cut for a second consecutive week, Spieth moved back to number one following the Deutsche. And now McIlroy is number one again, the spot he has held for 95 weeks, first getting it in 2012. And in other news related to Jordan Spieth, you know, the Jordan Spieth Green Jacket Tour continued on Saturday at the University of Texas. The Longhorns had their opener, their home opener against Rice University, and of course, the 2015 Masters Champions was in attendance. It's surprising that the 22-year-old was allowed back after his criticism of the Longhorns' play in the season opener. After missing consecutive court cuts for the first time in his career, Jordan took to Twitter to express his frustration for Texas struggles against Notre Dame last weekend, and he tweeted, "Texas offense looking about as useful as my last four rounds." Ouch. Regardless, it seems like he was still welcomed back with open arms on Saturday. Spieth, a known fanatic of his alma mater, had a busy day of festivities leading off to a kickoff. He started things off by joining the Longhorns Network Game Day crew before the game. Then during halftime of the game, the Longhorns paid tribute to him and to the Texas golf team who won his Big 12 this past season, and Jordan, who brought the green jacket along with him. His alma mater didn't stop there. The Longhorns band went out to spell out S-P-I-E-T-H on the field. This isn't the first time that Spieth has brought his green jacket with him to sporting events. He attended a Dallas Mavericks playoff game earlier in this year and wore the jacket on the floor during a timeout. You know, he's a Dallas native. He waved a customized Mavs jersey given to him by Mark Cuban, and thousands of fans went bonkers there for their hometown hero. Later on Saturday, he was spotted by fellow Texas alum and Masters winner Ben Crenshaw with him. So, Fred, there's a lot of love back here in Texas, in Dallas especially, for Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, you said Rory's been the number one for 95 weeks, a total of 95 weeks. He's only got 590 more weeks to go until he catches Tiger for that.
He's there. He's getting there.
Yeah, he's getting there. Hey, Carlos, you know I am not a fan of golf in the upcoming Olympics, but I may have to give this a rethink if the most interesting man in golf, Miguel Angel Jimenez, makes the Spanish team.
Yes.
He's 51 years old, currently ranks number 63 in the world, and number 2 behind Sergio Garcia to qualify for the team from Spain. Can you imagine Miguel Angel Jimenez in Rio with a big fat cigar and a glass of red wine in his hands, walking through the middle of Olympic Village with all the athletes around? The finely tuned athlete indeed. According to an MAJ Twitter account, he answered, "I would love that." Well, we would too. Jimenez has won on the Champions Tour in the U.S., and in 16 events on the European Tour this year, he has 6 top 10 finishes and earned over €972,000. He's number 20 in the Race to Dubai and won another €88,000 on the European Senior Tour. You know, it's a few months yet before the teams get picked, but, you know, Miguel Angel could very well be one of Spain's representatives at the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro next summer. Wouldn't that be fun, Carlos? I would watch the golf at Rio for that.
I would do too, and I can just imagine him doing the warm-up right there in the Olympic Village and the people just watching that. I mean, I would pay to see that. I would love to see him there. It would really bring some color to the Olympic golf. Hey, Fred, with another edition of the tournament set to begin this week, the B&W Championship has announced its rotation of host sites through 2019. This week's event will take place at Conway Farms Golf Club in Lake Forest, Illinois, which first hosted in 2013. Conway Farms will again host in 2017, while next year the scene shifts to Crooked Stick Golf Club in Carmel, Indiana, which hosted when Rory McIlroy won in 2012. The event will move east in 2018 to Aronimic Golf Club in Newtown Square in Pennsylvania. While it has never hosted the BMW before, Aronimic hosted the Quicken Loans National in 2010 and 2011, in addition to the PGA Championship in 1962 and U.S. Amateur in 1977. In 2019, the event will return to Medina Country Club in Medina, Illinois, which last hosted the event in 1966 when it was known as the Western Open. Like Vince Pellegrino, Senior Vice President of Tournaments for the Western Golf Association, said, each of these storied venues enjoys a rich history of hosting top-tier golf championships. While the tournament is annually the third leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, it's operated by the WGA. You know, the event was formerly a Chicago area staple, but in recent years, the WGA has begun a pattern of contesting it in Chicago every other year, with visits to other major metropolitan venues during the alternating years. Last year, Billy Horschel won at Cherry Hills Golf Club outside Denver, Colorado, and the BMW Championship is open to the top 70 players in the FedEx Cup points race, with the top 30 players after that advancing to the season-ending Tour Championship, Fred.
Yeah, Carlos, I hesitate to report this next item, but as a safety precaution to other golfers, I really feel it's necessary. You know, be careful when you go into the woods or other thick areas looking for wayward golf balls. Daryl Deaver, a doctor from Powell, Ohio, which is near Columbus, died at Treetops Golf Resort in Gaylord, Michigan last week after being stung by more than 20 times by bees. Deaver and a friend, also a doctor, were golfing together on Treetops North Course when Deaver went into some woods near the second hole to search for a ball. The bees came up out of the ground, stinging him in the head and the neck. Deaver had no known allergies to bees, but the intensity of so many stings in a short time quickly caused a major medical issue. He reported feeling sick and then began experiencing trouble breathing. Treetops is a very popular golf resort in northern Michigan and is known for its 5 golf courses, including the Par 3 Treetops that hosted the annual Par 3 contest sponsored by Ford with Phil Mickelson and 3 other professional golfers in the past. Treetops General Manager Barry Owens issued a statement, "Our thoughts and prayers are with the family and friends of Daryl Deaver during this very difficult time. This truly is a tragedy that is so unexpected. Nothing like this has ever happened at Treetops since the first course was built in 1987. Real tragedy, Carlos. I don't know what could have been done to prevent it. It was just one of those freak things that happened from time to time. We simply want to caution our listeners to take care when going, when looking for golf balls in the woods or off the fairways. Just be careful out there. Carlos, that ends the Par 5 News brought to you by United Golf Network for Tuesday, September 15th. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. And they'll match the low price, too, Carlos. If you talk to them, they'll fix you up. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has excellent product line, they also offer every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity. They also offer membership to My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And this is really a highlight of their package. If people aren't looking at, you know, if you're thinking about some golf travel, you're going to play golf someplace, you might want to check out United Golf Network. Get in their program because you can get some really good deals on golf travel. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Fred and I will take the practice range to talk about a full wall-to-wall preview of the Solheim Cup. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic and take our shots at it to bring you some comments on it. And this week, it's time to talk about the Solheim Cup. It's one of the most fiercely contended events in not only female golf, but female sports generally, taking place this week with the staging of the Solheim Cup at the St. Leon Rock Golf Club in St. Leon Rock in Germany. You know, Fred, talking about this, what some do as the most exciting week in ladies' golf, it's upon us again. It's a biennial competition between the best players from the United States and the best players from Europe. For 2 years, players have been attempting to play well in order to make their respective teams. And now they're heading to Germany in hopes that all that work leads to good fortune. This will be the 14th playing of the Solheim Cup. The United States still holds an advantage of 8-5, but the trend has been towards Europe. They have won twice in a row now, including their first ever win on U.S. soil. Their most recent meeting was an absolute rout at the hands of Europe in Colorado by the score of 18-10. Europe has won 4 of 6 matches that has taken place in Europe, but the last time the Solheim Cup was played in continental Europe, the U.S. walked out with a 16-12 victory in 2007 in Sweden. The course is the St. Leon Golf Club in Germany. There's not a lot of trouble off the tee on that course, so the big hitters will be at an advantage. Players will need to make birdies in order to win matches. This will be the first big international golf event to be held in Germany. Many are hoping that the Solheim Cup's success will lead to Germany being awarded the Ryder Cup in 2022. You know, Germany's Caroline Mazon said that the course was in the best condition I have ever seen it. So, Fred, how about a little bit of the background, the history, and the course of the Solheim Cup?
Yeah, Carlos, just a few notes here before we get into breaking down the teams a little bit. You know, the overall record in the Solheim Cup history, the U.S. has won 8 times and the Europeans have won 5. But the Europeans have won the last two in 2011 and 2013. The question is, can they make it three in a row here in Germany? There won't be any time difference or jet lag to worry about this week, as everyone was at the Evian Championship just last week in France. They just had a little six-hour bus ride over the course. You know, if you look at the Rolex rankings on paper, the USA should have the advantage. They have six players in the top 25 of the Rolex ranking. Stacy Lewis, number 3, Lexi Thompson, number 4, Brittany Lynchcombe, number 14, Christy Kerr, number 15, Michelle Wee, number 20, and Morgan Pressel, number 23. Europe only has two in the top 25, Suzanne Pedersen at number 8 and Anna Nordqvist at number 12. But does the world rankings really matter anyway? The Rolex rankings show performance in international medal play tournaments. Match play is a different animal altogether. Over 72 holes or 54 holes, the best all-round player will generally win. But in an 18-hole match play situation, the higher-ranked player may have a little chip on his or her shoulder, and the lower-ranked player may succumb to the pressure of not wanting a lesser player to beat them. Plus, you've got Segunda and Munoz from the successful Spanish team that won the International Crown last year in Baltimore on the European team. You want to talk about captains a little bit. Karen Koch from Sweden was on 4 European Solheim Cup teams. She was a part of 2 winning teams and 2 losing teams. She had an individual record of 10-3-3. In her own professional career, she really had no major wins, but she did win twice on the LPGA and had one win on the Ladies European Tour. So, you know, not that great of individual career, but she did very well in the Solheim Cup. Julie Engstrom, on the other hand, won 7 majors. Plus, she won 3 U.S. Women's Amateur Championships. She had 41 professional wins and was inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame in 2000. She won everything and everywhere. She had a fantastic career. She is very high energy, well-liked, and respected by everyone. She was 15-12-7 in Solheim and was a member of 5 winning teams, as well as, though, 4 losing teams. So a little bit about the course. St. Leon Roth is near Heidelberg-Mannheim in the southwest portion of Germany. It opened in 1997. At 6,541 meters, which is about 7,150 yards, it can be a long course, but it'll probably play more like the 6,600 yards, give or take a little bit, for the Solheim Cup. St. Leon was designed by English architect Dave Thomas and is modeled after a links-style course. Much of its landscaping is reminiscent of Scottish or Irish golf courses. Golf Journal selected the course the most popular golf course in Germany in 2011, 2012, and 2013, Carlos. So I'll turn it back over to you for our next segment.
And let's talk now about the teams. We're going to talk first about the Team USA and then Team Europe. So let's take first Team USA. Like you mentioned, Julie Engstrom is the most prolific American Solheim Cup player of all time. She was called upon to try and stop recent trends, namely Europe trashing the Americans, especially in 4-ball and single matches. Many expected her to make changes among her players, but she never got that opportunity because of the 10 players that are automatically qualified for the team. 9 of them were on the team in 2013. Engstrom then called upon a couple of veterans to round out her team, so the team with the records are as follows: Christy Kerr, 12-14-4, Allison Lee, she's a rookie, Stacy Lewis, 2-5-1, Brittany Lynchcombe, 5-7-2, Jerina Peelers, 0-2-1, Morgan Pressel, 8-5-2, Lisette Salas, 0-1-2, Angela Stanford, 3-11-3, Lexi Thompson, 1-2-0, Michelle Wee, 6-5-1, Paula Creamer, one of the captains peak, 12-6-5, and Brittany Lang, the other captains peak, 5-4-2. All eyes are going to be on Paula Creamer, who had to rely on the captain's pick for the first time in her career. She enters missing 4 straight cuts, and her form has been bad all season, but she has also the best Solheim record of any active American player, and many consider her the emotional leader of that team. the smart strategy may have been to her right to ride the bench for most of the week, but Inkster insists that Creamer will get the share of her action. Asked if she was concerned about her recent form, Inkster said, and I quote, "Match play just seems to bring out the best in Paula. I'm not worried. She's one of my best old players, and I'm going to play her. My keys to the victory, in the end, you know, Paula Creamer won't sink Team USA if she doesn't play well. But, of course, that doesn't penalize wild shots off the tee. Team USA will need to rely on their big hitters, of which they are not in short supply, to create scoring opportunities. Lexi Thompson, Brittany Lincecum, and Michelle Wee need to be among the players who have to have winning records this week. And Stacey Lewis, who is the top-ranked American in the world, needs to turn around her Solheim Cup fortune and walk away with a winning record for the U.S. to win for it."
Yeah, Stacey just played terrible in Denver, if you remember. I mean, it was hard to watch. I think she was putting too much – it's back when she was putting too much pressure on herself. Things weren't going well, and it really went sideways, and she just couldn't get it turned around. There was a selfie today on Facebook of Morgan Preslin and Lexi Thompson. Doesn't that make a nice team for four-ball or foursome? Preslin's consistency and Lexi's aggressive style and length. I'll bet we'll see that this week. You know, you talk about players, you know, on the team. Michelle Wee, you know, really had a terrible year by her standards, especially by what she did in 2014. But, you know, she's been plagued by injury. She did play okay at the Evian last week. She finished T16. After an opening 75, she went 66, 70, and 70. So she played good the final three rounds. You know, she's still only 25 years old, Carlos, and this is her third Solheim Cup appearance. I really think Michelle has to have a good, solid week for the U.S. team to do well, and I think you're exactly right. Stacey has to play better also. You know, you talked about Paula Creamer. You know, she's the big question mark to me. Was her choice justified? Yeah, you know, like Phil Mickelson for the President's Cup, she does give Inkster some, you know, someone she can sit for a couple sessions and is a tremendous leader in the clubhouse. So, you know, maybe for those reasons, I guess. But both captains, Karen Koch and Julie Inkster, passed over some really good young people to make some of the choices that they picked for their captain's pick. Youth on the team, Allison Lee is the only rookie on the U.S. team and the only rookie in the whole Solheim Cup this year. Lexi Thompson, Lizette Salas, and Jarena Piller only have one previous Solheim Cup appearance, but at least they have one. Veterans on the American team, Christy Kerr has the most appearances with 7. Angela Stanford and Paula Creamer both have been on 5 Solheim Cup teams. Morgan Preslin, Brittany Lincecum are next with 4. Stacey Lewis and Brittany Lang have made 3 teams. Creamer and Lincecum are both still 29. But Lincecum turns 30 this week. So, you know, they've been around a while. You know, they've been there, done that. So, you know, we've got some experience going. You know, U.S. is still smarting, coming off that first loss ever on American soil in 2013 at Colorado Country Club in Denver. It seemed like every European Tour player was outstanding 2 years ago, and the U.S. team just could not get anything going. Can the Europeans really compete against the U.S.? I mentioned the Rolex rankings earlier. There's, you know, hardly any. There's only 2 players from the European team in the top 25. There are no rookies on the European team. Every player has been on at least one previous Solheim Cup team. You've got Suzanne Pedersen and Catriona Matthew that have the most experience with 7 different times they've been on teams. Matthew is 12-9-8 overall, and Pedersen is 14-9-6. They bring the stability to the team. Anna Norquist played fantastic 2 years ago in Denver, if you remember. And Gladys Nocera have been on 3 teams. Azahara Munoz, Karine Ishe, and Caroline Hedwall have all played on 2 Solheim Cup teams. And Hedwall, she has been just off the charts. She can't win on her. I guess she's won 1 time now, but you know, she has a career record of 7-1-1 in Solheim competition, and she was 5-0 at Denver 2 years ago, if you remember, Carlos. She pretty much single-handedly defeated the American team. Melissa Reed, Caroline Masson, Charlie Hall, Sandra Gal, and Carlotta Segonda all have played in at least one previous Solheim Cup. Those are your new kids for the European team, and they've all at least had some experience. They've played all over the world. You know, they're pretty seasoned. So with her four captain's picks, Karen Koch got a mixture of veterans and youth, Katrina Matthew, Karina Shea, and then Caroline Masson and Hedwall. So, you know, you pretty much had to pick Hedwall. Masson's been very steady. She's played very well. You know, Carlos, I don't know. When you break it all down, you know, on paper, you know, we said, you know, it looks like the Americans have the edge. They got the Rolex rankings, you know, they got the big names. But here it is, you know, the Europeans keep playing well. It's a home game for them. They're in Germany. It's going to be very exciting, but, you know, I still have to give the edge to the Americans a little bit. I may be wrong, but, you know, they should win, Carlos.
Well, talking about Team Europe, you know, after hitting a home run with Lisson Leit Neumann 2 years ago, Team Europe is turning now to another suite to lead them, which is Karen Koch, like you mentioned. While Inser needed to rebuild Team USA, Koch is just trying to keep them together. It was a more difficult task than expected, as many of the players from the winning 2000 team have experienced good form in recent months. Still, Koch and Team Europe is playing with house money, as all the pressure to win is square on the shoulders of Team USA. You know, the members, like you mentioned, of the Team Europe, as well as their Solheim Cup's records, I'm going to mention it was Carlotta Segonda 4-3-1, Sandra Gal 0-2-1, Charlie Hall 2-1-0, Ezahara Munoz 4-3-1, Gladys Nocera 5-3-2, Anna Nordqvist 6-5-1, Suzanne Pedersen 14-9-6, Melissa Reed 1-3-0, Carolyn Hedwall last edition's hero, and a captain's pick 7-1-1. Karini Kerr, another captain's pick, 3-3-1. Caroline Masson, another captain's pick, 2-1-1. And Katrina Matthew, the other captain's pick, 12-9-8. You know, Julie Ingster picked a struggling Paula Creamer based on her Solheim Cup success alone. And Karine Koch did the same thing by picking Caroline Hedwall, who went 5-0, like you mentioned, 2 years ago, but has struggled mightily ever since. Team Europe, they have the youngest player in the matches, which is Charlie Hall with 19, is also the older of the two teams, boasting two players in the 40s, while Team USA doesn't have any. Melissa Reed, Gladys Nocera, and Sandra Gal are the only players to return to the Solheim Cup after playing in the matches previously, but not in 2013. So after entering that year with six rookies, Team Europe doesn't have a single rookie this year. My keys to the victory for it, you know, Ezahara Munoz and Carlotta Segonda having experience of defeating team competitions in their professional careers. Munoz was a member of the 2011 victorious Solheim Cup. Both were a member of the 2013 team, and both were a member of Spain's winning international cup team last year. Look for both players to play a lot and play well. Koch selected Hedwall as a match play specialist. Hedwall has had a terrible season, so the pick was a gamble for Koch. She needs to play well. Sandra Gal and Caroline Masson will have a very raucous home crowd behind them. They're Germans, and if they're able to feed up that energy, there won't be an American player that would want to face them. My prediction, you know, Team USA is entering with a ton of question marks. Creamer has had a rough season. Michelle Wee has struggled with injuries all season. Angela Stanford hasn't played well in Solheim Cups lately. And with the exception of Lexi Thompson, no one is really entering with a ton of momentum at their back. They also have the only rookie in the matches, Allison Lee, who is a complete unknown in terms of how she will play with the pressure on her. Luckily for Team USA, you know, they're not playing against an international team. If they had to go toe-to-toe with a team led by, let's say, Inbae Park, Lydia Ko, Hyun Kim, and Chan Chanfeng, they would have gotten smoke. You know, but against Team Europe, however, they have, at least on paper, the far superior team. Team USA apparently is embracing that underdog feel, but that is not quite accurate. While Team has won the last two, and they have the home course advantage, Team USA, again, on paper, has the players. Team USA enters with two players inside the top 10, the rolling rankings, and every single one of their players is in the top 50. Europe, however, has only one player inside the top 10, which is Susanne Pedersen at 8, while 8 of their players are ranked 50th or worse. One of their players, Caroline Hedwall, is ranked outside the top 100. That will tell you how bad she's been playing in the last 2 years, but we all know what she has done in the Solheim Cup. So, you know, and then still is the Solheim Cup, and anything can happen. Team USA has entered with a superior team on paper and had gotten beaten before, but Team Europe still had the players entering the event that were playing well. None of Team Europe players are entering in form, while Team USA are not the underdogs. The fact that they think they are will fuel them, in my opinion. Team USA will give Team Europe a taste of their own medicine, and to me, a decisive victory on the home soil of them. To me, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say 18-10 Team USA. So, any final words on the Solheim Cup, Fred?
18-10, boy, that's a runaway. I think it's going to be a lot closer than that, Carlos. I think a couple points here or there. I think it's going to come down to singles on Sunday. And if it does, I think the U.S. has the edge because they've got the better players. You know, just like 18 holes can make a difference in one match, you've got 12 singles matches. So because of that, the better players should over 12 matches, you know, even things out and win. So, but, you know, I think it's going to be pretty close. I think it's going to be exciting. Germany should be a great venue for it. This is a wonderful golf course. So, but I think the Americans are going to win, but I think it's going to be pretty close, Carlos.
Well, see, you have it. You heard it here this Tuesday. You know, 4 days before, I say 18-10. Fred picks up USA, but close. So we'll see next week who was right or who's wrong, or maybe both were wrong. I don't know what's going to happen. Anyway, you know, now let's go for the final putts to end before we end the show. And sorry, I'm going to be talking about the Oak Hill Country Club, who will host the 2023 PGA Championship on its fabled East Course. The PGA of America announced that on Wednesday. It's located outside Rochester, New York. Oak Hill has been the site of past major victories by notables such as Jack Nicklaus, Liv Torino, and Curtis Strange, and also one-hit wonders such as Sean Mitchell and Jason Duffner. That 2023 tournament will be the fourth PGA Championship stage in the Donald Ross design, tying it with Oklahoma's Southern Hills Country Club as the event's most prolific host. The Democratic and Chronicle first reported the news of the PGA's Oak Hill return last month. The report speculated that the club is in line to become a core venue in a PGA Championship rotation, meaning it would return every 7 or 8 years. Meanwhile, the USGA announced on Tuesday that the Broodmoor in Colorado Springs, Colorado, will host the 2018 U.S. Senior Open on its East Course, another Donald Ross design. The USGA previously staged the 2008 U.S. Senior Open and 2 U.S. Women's Opens on the East layout, Fred.
Yeah, real quickly, Carlos, I've got a couple things here. Not too far removed is the junior himself. Ricky Fowler becomes a junior league ambassador. He joins Rory McIlroy and Michelle Wee. PGA Junior League Golf is owned and operated by the PGA of America, and under its guidance, the program boasts approximately 30,000 boys and girls playing on 2,500 teams this year. Fowler said, PGA Junior League Golf represents the future of our game. I'm excited about its growth, and by joining forces with Roy and Michelle as ambassadors, we have the opportunity to help introduce the game to the next generation of golfers. The golf decline has kind of finally hit Japan, Carlos. Japan was once known for its rabid golfers who were willing to pay exorbitant amounts to play the game and travel around the world to visit the best golf courses. Bloomberg Business reported this week that a golf decline has caused a slump of 30% from its heyday in the early 1990s, and the average cost of a round has fallen by a third. Sales of golf courses has shrunk by half. Japan is facing the same type of golfing decline in numbers that we have seen in the U.S. for the past few years. The sport generated $11.5 billion in sales for Japan's courses, driving ranges, equipment retailers in 2013, and that's less than half the revenue of the peak years prior to that. So, you know, Japan's seeing the same kind of thing we're seeing here. A couple things real quick also, Carlos, looks like we got a minute here. The September issue of NW Golf Links Richard Todd is our golf rules guy that contributes every month, and he just came out with a golf coloring book, and it's available at Amazon. I've been tweeting and posting on Facebook about that, so if you want to find the link to that, go there to get it. And Lakewood Shores in Oscoda, Michigan has 54 holes of three great golf courses up there. $59 a night for room and unlimited golf. What a deal, Carlos.
Say that again. How much?
$59 a night.
No way. No way.
That's a deal.
Wow. I just wish Michigan would be near where I live now and here in Dallas, Texas. So, anyway, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back Nine Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. So happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.